Welcome to the Surrogacy UK podcast series. My name is Natalie Silverman and I host the Fertility Podcast, and I'm working with Surrogacy UK to create this series of podcasts to help you understand all about what's involved becoming a surrogate, or if you are looking to work with a surrogate as an intended parent, how it would be for you. In this episode, you're going to hear a birth story. This is with Sarah, one of our surrogates that you heard in our roundtable chat, and Nick, who is the intended parent. Now, Nick and Michael, his partner, worked with Sarah for their two children. So what you will learn about is a sibling project, which I hope will give you more of an understanding of another way that surrogates can work with intended parents.
Hi, I'm Nick Scott, and my partner is American. So surrogacy is a thing there, where I don't think in my life when I was growing up it was a thing in the UK. So when I met him, he always talked about wanting a child that was kind of genetically ours, I guess, and talked about surrogacy therefore. I don't think I would have even thought about it particularly. I wanted children, but I didn't really have very strong views on particularly how or what process by which we had children. That's how we kind of ended up looking at the surrogacy route. We're very lucky in our timing in that we were kind of ready to do that in 2011, mid-late 2011. We'd just been 6 months in Buenos Aires together, had lots of long discussions there about what we should do next. Should we buy a house, or should we have kids, or should we try and stay in Latin America, that kind of thing, and then decided that we'd come back and try and have kids. The first contact we had with Surrogacy UK was in August 2011. We sent an email to Surrogacy UK, and I think it was about 3 weeks before we got a reply, which would usually not have been a great sign. We sent it to the gay intended parents contact. But when we did get a reply, it was like, really, really sorry, we haven't replied for 3 weeks. The day you sent your email, we had our daughter, and it was the first gay couple to have had a child through Surrogacy UK, through that organisation. And so we were literally, in terms of Surrogacy UK, but also in terms of the law, which I think had only just changed in 2009, very close to the beginning when we were ready of it actually being a possibility in the UK. Before, surrogacy was not something that you could do as a gay couple. Obviously, you can do whatever you want. In some senses, if you're not going through a clinic, you can do what, which our first son was born through straight surrogacy. So we could have done that. But I think we would have had legal trouble in making him legally ours at that point. After 2009, I believe that was open. And so organizations like Surrogacy UK, our first conference, say there were four, maybe five gay couples, of which one was this couple who'd had the first kid. And another were pregnant, and I think two others plus us were there. So it's kind of big room and a very small gay contingent, where now it's much better recognized, and that conferences are very different now in terms of there's a lot more gay couples in who understand and know that this is an option. So I don't think we knew when we went to that conference that the law had just changed or had relatively recently changed. I think we found that out very soon after we went to the conference that we just kind of, at the time we were looking, everything said, yes, you can do this. So we did, on the assumption that it was possible.
In 2011, when you came to the conference and started the conversations, how long then did it take until you found your surrogate and the journey started?
I mean, the journey for us was actually relatively short. We went to the conference in October, I think. So we first got in contact with Surrogacy UK in August, went to, I think, an October conference. At that point, we weren't full members of Surrogacy UK. We were still in the process of becoming full members. But that one thing that we found out from the conference, and that particular time, there were a lot more surrogates who were open to host surrogacy than there were to straight surrogacy.
Can you just explain that for me?
Yeah, so there were a lot more surrogates who were willing to be surrogates where it was essentially someone else's egg and an embryo created through IVF, whereas straight surrogacy it's a very different affair, having gone for it. It's essentially home insemination. So it's more about having an insemination kit and just being around at the right time in a woman's cycle. And there's very little, apart from, you know, the amount that the surrogate may choose to test her fertility cycle, there's very little that's scientific about it. It's pretty standard stuff in that respect. It's the kind of thing that people tend to call turkey baster, but it's not. But, you know, it's that kind of thing.
So you have one or two children through a surrogate?
Our first child, Elliot, was born through straight surrogacy. That had been our preference. It just so happened that the surrogate who wanted to get to know us was Sarah and was open to straight surrogacy.
So let's just go back to Elliot, to that experience of Sarah being a straight surrogate, and as you said so eloquently earlier, being in the right place at the right time, which is how a heterosexual couple would try and conceive. So was that quite surreal, that having to be there and do your thing, and or was it just so part of the process that it was just exciting?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that it's not easy to be in the right place at the right time when you live hundreds of miles away from it. So Sarah's about 4 hours, 4.5 hours drive. So there's definitely a case of you get a call and she says, well, I'm ovulating, and you have to kind of get on the first train. At that point, I couldn't drive, so I'd get on a train and have to kind of work my way to get to her. She'd probably at that point pick me up in the car from somewhere, drive me to her house. We'd ordered all of the equipment, the sterile tubes and various other things, all off some online supplier who hadn't delivered. So I had something I wouldn't want to repeat that often. I worked on the third floor of a building, and on the first floor was a thing called InterHealth, which is kind of a vaccinations and international health things. And so when I got the call from Sarah saying I'm ovulating, I had to go downstairs and actually ask at the reception, do you happen to have any little sort of sterile specimen pots? They were like, why do you want them? And I just couldn't think of any good excuse apart from explaining exactly why I wanted these sterile specimen pots. And they were like, here, have a load.
And how did you decide between the two of you who was going to do the deed, so to speak? Or did you both provide samples?
So you can't both at the same time. They literally fight each other, as far as I'm concerned.
No, I didn't mean at the same time. I just meant, did you do alternate times, or how did you work it?
We did alternate months. One month would be Michael trying, the other month would be me trying. So I did the first month and then didn't work. The second month did work. And that's how Elliot was conceived.
And so the second journey with Sarah, where you had as a host, was that you again or was that Michael?
The first one had been Michael that we'd conceived with.
Oh, right,
because
sorry.
I tried and then didn't. And then, yeah, the second time we'd gone through the process when we'd be trying straight, we'd gone through a whole kind of process of a few months where it was me trying, because the idea had been it would be me, and then so they'd be kind of half siblings. But you know, I think it's quite relatively common amongst the gay couples, I would say, that it tends to be doing siblings. Whoever didn't have the first child would have the second child as a genetic link, although practically it makes no difference, of course. We tried a few months with me, and then when it wasn't working, we did go back to try with Michael, thinking maybe it was, you know, something to do with me. We spent quite a lot of time trying to find clinics, or looking and finding that clinics don't do surrogacy, where it's actually the woman's egg. Sarah donated her own egg to herself. She had to fill in all sorts of forms that didn't really make any sense whatsoever for her to fill in, because it wasn't a setup for that kind of thing. But so yeah, we definitely were at that point agreed it would be through me. We had to go through a whole battery of tests, STD, various other tests.
Sure.
Because we were going to put down on our kind of joining information that we were open for straight. And so Surrogacy UK insists on you having all the tests if you're doing straight, including sperm analysis and a few other kind of genetic disease tests and so on. So that process took a long time. We then had to go through it again the second time round, when we were going to do straight surrogacy after Elliot for our second child. And then we went through again a third round of those same tests, more or less, with the clinic, when we ended up doing with the clinic. We were very heavily tested. We knew pretty well that we were doing okay in all those regards.
So let's fast forward. We've got the success of a pregnancy. We've got it twice. So I want to know about the moment, first time, when you found out that Sarah had gone into labour. You talked about the distance. Were you 4 hours away, or knowing that she was nearly due, we heard you move nearer?
When the labour was approaching, we'd move nearer. But actually, Elliot, our son, there was a low-lying placenta combined with Elliot being transverse breech. Basically means kind of, I think, lying, like horizontal, but down, with your belly facing down. Those two, when also combined with the fact that Sarah's last child had come in a space of 20, 25 minutes, very, very quick delivery. You know, she hadn't even managed to get out of her house, essentially. The doctors said that she had to stay in hospital. And so she went into hospital 2 weeks before the due date. And so at that point, we were ready to move up north. So my grandma lives not too far away. But actually, at that point, for the first of those 2 weeks, her husband he was a train driver, so he has lots of shifts that are unusual hours. So we actually moved into her house and spent the first of the 2 weeks that she was in hospital before Elliot was born looking after her kids. We took them to school, we picked them up from school, took them to the hospital in the evening so they'd see her. I mean, she spent 2 weeks on maternity ward, which she just had to kind of sit there for 2 weeks, definitely being thrown in at the deep end in some ways. Obviously, we knew her kids very well and we'd spent lots of time with them, but having to suddenly look after, I think, how old would they have been? They probably would have been 5 and 7 or 4 and 6. A big learning curve.
I bet.
So we were there anyway when the day of labour approached, waiting because there was a C-section planned.
So were you in there with her? Or was it too complicated from a medical point of view with the C-section?
No, we were in there with her. The hospital and the NHS generally kind of bent over backwards in various ways to make the experience very inclusive. I mean, once they got it, they kind of bent over backwards. So there was points at which they didn't quite get it. You know, once it kind of, they understood these are going to be the parents, they were very good. Yeah, we were in the operating theatre, me personally not looking at anywhere other than Sarah's face because I'm quite squeamish. We saw the whole thing and were talking to Sarah the whole time. Michael saw more than I did, saw Elliot getting pulled out, saw, for Elliot we didn't know the sex, so kind of learned that all together. While they were kind of finishing off the operation, she was sitting there watching Michael and I meet Elliot. The same thing happened with Erica. In fact, and for Erica, I'd say it was even better. We kind of had a really nice medical team, and also it was a really sunny day. The sun was streaming in, and with Elliot, we'd been taken downstairs after Elliot was born and after the delivery, and kind of had time alone. Whereas actually with Erica, they left us all in a room, so we were there with Sarah while she was just sort of waiting for her blood pressure to stabilize, various other things to stabilize. So we're there for a good, you know, hour and a half with Sarah before we went to our room and she went for a rest.
So as far as that journey twice with her, Sarah, as we're going to speak to, and I've already spoken with her, is a remarkable woman. Was that conversation had quite quickly after Elliot that she would be willing to provide you with a sibling?
So I think she brought up before we even officially pregnant with Elliot, I think she said something along the lines of, my husband says, do it for one, you're gonna have to do it for the other. Hmm. Or something as a kind of the first time it was mentioned. But she definitely did officially ask in the weeks before Elliot was born, and we kind of said yes, of course, but we should probably like have a baby first, mm-hmm. to just kind of check that that's all right. It was relatively inevitable. There was not any kind of question at that point, at the point at which we were making the decision. There's kind of a 6 months before you can enter a new agreement for various, very sensible reasons in Surrogacy UK. We knew that at that 6 month point, we'd be entering an agreement to try again.
So what is the age gap between Elliot and Erica?
It's nearly 4 years, not quite. It's kind of 3 years, three and three quarter years.
And during the journeys, and you talk about the advice from Surrogacy UK, and I witness the family feeling from them as an organisation, and you've talked about the growing gay community. I mean, I hadn't even thought it through when I first went. I just assumed there was loads of blokes there. I hadn't actually thought that it was a lot of same-sex couples, but it was brilliant to see. What kind of advice would you give to future IPs from your journeys?
I guess initially, piece of advice, this is not, it's not hugely complicated once you get to know more about it. You just need to kind of stick with it and kind of work through bit by bit. The surrogates are wonderful people who really, I've just always been so impressed by the kind of the community and how obviously they do wonderful things, but you know, how lovely and friendly and helpful it is. And I think if just enjoy the ride. We always tell people to go to, there's a lot of socials held by Surrogacy UK, and we've always kind of advised, go to the ones up north, go to the ones that are kind of far away from the big centres of London, because that's when you'll actually meet people. But it's also a chance to see a bit of Britain, to go to places you wouldn't usually go to. I've always, and I know this is kind of random, but Surrogacy's opened a whole new kind of group of people who I would otherwise not really meet, because it's kind of completely outside of my usual bubble, living in kind of, you know, metropolitan London person kind of enjoy the process, and then the process does deliver, you know, everyone it has delivered for it does, you know, you get there, and the more you enjoy the process, the more you can kind of, you can avoid the stress that might come with, you know, am I going to get picked, is someone going to help me, help us, you know, is it all going to go all right? You know, there's lots of stresses to the process. It's not easy, but the more you can enjoy it, the more you can kind of see it as part of a thing that you're doing in your life, and then actually, frankly, the more likely you're going to come across as someone that someone would want to help.
That's good advice. Nick, thank you. It's been really interesting chatting with you.
Thank you too.
And enjoy your two little ones.
Will do.
Cheers, Nick.
Cheers.
Bye.
My name's Sarah Jones. I'm a four-time surrogate. Surrogate baby one and two were for two separate heterosexual couples, and babies three and four were for a same-sex couple, Nick and Michael.
Sarah, I've spoken with Nick about the journey with Elliot and then with Erica, and he'd explained the first time with Elliot was with you as a straight surrogate. So just talk me through that.
I decided to be a straight surrogate because I felt that emotionally I could deal with it a lot better than the practicalities of having to go to a clinic numerous times in a week because I'd already got one child and was a single parent. So for me, that was very much a factor in deciding to be a straight surrogate because it was a lot easier time-wise, and I knew I would be completely okay with all the emotional aspects of straight surrogacy.
And you obviously had to be quite aware of your cycle to inform the intended parent when the right time for them to, as I heard from Nick, hop on a train to come and do his bit, so to speak.
Yeah, that's right. I had to track my cycle every month using an ovulation predictor kit. So every month I would pee on a stick every day for about 10 days to make sure that I'd caught when I was ovulating. As soon as I get a positive on the ovulation predictor kit, I would give Nick and Michael a call first thing in the morning. So that gave them the day to sort of rearrange work, etc., so that they could get to me by the evening. And then we would do inseminations that night and usually the day after and the day after that.
And that process, had you got advice from anybody else that had done it? It's a process, isn't it, that you have to go through and make sure you do it right. Who helped you work out what you were doing with that, or was it something you just Googled?
I worked out how to sort of do the inseminations from Surrogacy UK. So they provided me with general information, and then the other surrogates were a wealth of information for me, things to do and things not to do, like breathe, things like that. There are certain things that you're told by other straight surrogates what to do and what not to do. So yes, working on their very, very good advice and experience is how we worked out how to do inseminations.
And I know from speaking with Nick that once pregnant, when Elliot was due to arrive, it became a bit more complicated and you were actually in hospital for a good couple of weeks, which must have been a bit annoying.
It had its pros and cons. I was away from my children, which was a big con, but it would probably be the only way I would get to relax for a couple of weeks before the birth, in all honesty. So that was a bit of a pro for me. The fact that I wasn't on bed rest, but I did spend a lot of time sitting down, relaxing and being quite calm before the birth. That was something that I wouldn't have been able to do had I had to have been at home. But I did really miss my children while I was in hospital. But they were very well looked after by Nick and Michael while I was in hospital. They were quite happy.
So you'd had two surrogate babies at this point and two of your own. So four children already.
I've got five children of my own, because I have an older child as well. I've got a daughter that's 21, and then I had two surrogate children, and then I had two children of my own, and then I had two more surrogate children, so seven in total. Yes, I'd had one, two, three, four, five. Yes, so Elliot was number six.
Was Elliot your first C-section?
He was my first C-section, yes, which I hate to say, but I really enjoyed. It was a planned C-section.
I think C-section. By child number six, you can enjoy that.
Yes, I think I'd done my dues by
yes,
that point.
I know,
I'd done enough for labouring naturally, but I enjoyed the sort of planned C-section. I enjoyed the fact that Nick and Michael could be involved in that, and everything was really calm and relaxed, which is obviously very different from, you know, going into labour. etc. So yeah, no, I really enjoyed the C-section.
And how was the journey with a same-sex couple to the previous two with the heterosexual couples, just with regards to how you were feeling and how it was watching them? And, you know, obviously the process is different. Everybody obviously starting their family, it's the same, it doesn't matter. But, you know, what did you feel different about?
I suppose for me, right from the very beginning, it was a very different journey to my other two journeys, because for a same-sex couple, surrogacy is sort of one of the only ways to have a child genetically linked to you. So for a same-sex couple, it's a very positive experience to go through surrogacy, whereas with a heterosexual couple, you know, they may have already been through a few rounds of IVF themselves and are coming at it from a completely different aspect, I suppose. Whereas for a same-sex couple, it's just sort of the next step on their journey to have a family. And it's all very positive. So in those respects, it was very different. In all other respects, it was very similar, I would say.
And you obviously felt the bond was strong enough to say quite early on that you were happy to go again with the pair of them.
Yes, definitely. We got on really, really well, never had a cross word. And I knew that it was important for them to have a sibling that was genetically related to Elliot. And they'd already sort of said that they didn't really want to have any other surrogates. So I was more than happy to try for a sibling for them. I hadn't done a sibling project before. And so that was a new thing for me. And I really enjoyed doing the sibling project.
Nick was talking about from when they joined Surrogacy UK to now, the number of same-sex couples has increased. And you're very involved with the organisation. You've obviously seen that growth too. So what kind of advice would you say as far as surrogates working with same-sex couples, just from the experience that you've had?
To be honest, it's no different from the heterosexual couples. The advice that I'd give for anybody working with a couple is just to get to know them really well, work on that bond and building a friendship. Just enjoy yourselves while you get to know each other. Make sure that that bond is really strong before starting a surrogacy journey. So it's really the same advice that I'd give anybody, regardless of whether it was a same-sex couple or a heterosexual couple.
I suppose I wondered whether there was ever any tension if both guys were wanting the genetic link and one wasn't working and the other was, because I know that the guys were alternating when they were trying straight. Did you ever sense that there was any tension, or was it just, you know, just keep trying?
They never showed me that there was any tension at all. They didn't put that onto me, so that was lovely, really. I mean, what we did was we took it in turns every month. One of the boys tried every month, so it was just going to be random who ended up being the bio dad. I think that worked really well, to be honest. It gave everybody a fair chance.
And I know that you had quite a bit of media interest at the time. What was that like?
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. It was really good to show a really well-bonded team, I suppose, because we're all fairly laid back, all of us. So our team worked really well because of that. And we are genuine friends. So it was lovely to be able to capture that. In addition, it's really nice for Elliot and Erica to sort of have that as they grow up. You know, they can look back on how we all were together as well. So it's a bit of a record.
And was the media interest because it was a same-sex couple with a surrogate? Or was it an awareness story that you were being spoken to about, just that union had happened?
Yeah, I mean, it's always about trying to make people aware of surrogacy, because as you're probably aware, it's only really negative stories that get a lot of press. Whenever there's an opportunity to do some really good stories about good surrogacy, then we try really hard to be able to do that, because obviously in the UK it's illegal to advertise. If you need a surrogate, it's illegal to say that. And if you are looking for a couple as a surrogate, it's illegal to advertise that. So with regards to finding surrogates, the only real way to do it is by doing lots of media. And the more positive stories that can be shown out there, the better, because it then reassures people that maybe we're thinking about doing surrogacy, that they might want to come forward and research it a bit more. So it's always good to give back, I think, by doing things like that.
Now, we spoke with your other surrogate pals about your whole journey, and you talked about how you'd retired. And I'm curious, after the conference, because I spoke to you before the conference, I'm curious as to whether that's still the case.
I'm finding it very difficult to be retired, in all honesty. It's pretty much a daily daily struggle to not offer to be a surrogate again. It's very difficult for me because I've made so many good friends within Surrogacy UK, and a lot of them are intended parents that are waiting for a surrogate. And so some of these intended parents are some of my best friends, and it is really difficult not to offer, because I know it would be quite easy and straightforward, and that I would be able to give my friend the gift of a child, but that there'll always be somebody else. You know, even if I do it one more time, there'll always be somebody else that will need help. And it is time for me to sort of step back and let some of the younger surrogates come through. And however, I am now going on to do known egg donation for some intended parents that I know. So in a silly sort of way, I'm sort of weaning myself off surrogacy by doing a known egg donation. So I can still feel involved and still do something to help some of my friends without actually offering to be their surrogate.
Sarah, you're a remarkable woman. Lovely to chat. I think you need to put a new battery in your smoke alarm, though.
Oh, I know. The thing is, it doesn't go off all the time. It just randomly just beeps for no reason.
When someone's recording a chat with you, it'll go off.
I know.
Thank you, lovely. Take care. Bye. It's been such a privilege to find out about a surrogacy journey from the perspective of both an intended parent and a surrogate. And what's clear from listening to Sarah and Nick is that teamwork is key to a successful surrogacy journey. So if you would like to find out more about Surrogacy UK and their Friendship First ethos, either as an intended parent or as a surrogate, please visit surrogacyuk.org.